The following podcast is a Super Network production with your hosts, Super Marcy.
The main character of Plug is dirty and disgusting, and there's a scene in this film and you see he's got his big mutton chops, he's wearing a hat, he's making these grunting sounds.
The terrible Australian B. Jemine.
Marcy, there's a scene for poor Barry McKenzie where French police shoot up an entire box of Foster's beer with machine guns.
It contains coarse and explicit language.
No, absolutely nothing. There's nothing there. This is shit. This is a shithole of a movie.
Mature themes.
I knew it was going to be a documentary about sex, but I thought it would be more about love and relationships and stuff like that. I didn't realise it was going to be about venereal diseases.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
For more, please visit supermarcy.com and show your support at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 8th episode of the Ozploidcast, the podcast where my co-host Super Marcy and I take a deep dive into Australia's Ozploitation movement from the very beginning right up until today. And with me, of course, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for such a lovely introduction, Bede. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. I just finished work for the day, so I literally just got home not before and just jumped online and getting ready to talk nothing but Ozploitation movies for this episode.
Yeah, boy. But unlike last episode, we are not alone for this one.
Indeed, we have a very special guest who's making his debut appearance on the show. But he has been on other episodes of our podcast before, on different shows of ours, particularly Super Podcast. And that, of course, is the co-host of the awesome podcast, Indicator Cast, and now the Imprint Cast, and that is John Matthews. Hello, John. How are you?
Good. Doing well. Thank you for having me on. I'm very excited. I do love a good Ozploitation. So, very keen to join. So thank you for having me.
It must have been very slightly nerve-wracking to watch 5 movies in prep for this episode.
yes, but it was worth it. There were interesting discoveries that I'd never seen. Well, sorry, 4 of them I'd never seen. So yes, it was definitely worth it.
Yeah,
awesome.
And we do it every month. It's a lot of hard work to do this podcast, just saying.
And sometimes we think like, oh, we'll do it like ahead of time, we'll watch a movie.
We never do.
We always end up watching it within at least a few days before we even record.
What do you mean at least a few days? More like the day before.
Well, that too. I literally just finished watching one of the movies for this episode literally just today, earlier. So that was fun. before we actually get to the discussion at hand, John, I got to ask this question. This is your first time on the Ozploidcast. I got to ask this question to every guest of ours. What is your relationship with the Ozploitation genre, and what is one of the earliest ones you remember seeing?
Yeah, I really, the Ozploitation genre, it's quite interesting. Growing up, I saw quite a few films in the genre that I didn't realize were Australian for some of them, if that makes sense. Some of them I actually thought were American, but obviously they're not. They were kind of targeted towards an international audience. But I think one of the first ones I ever saw that I knew was Australian was Road Games. It was one I recall seeing on TV many years ago, and that's actually one of my favorite Ozploitations. So, over the years I've discovered, I've just seen so many, I guess some of the big ones. But yeah, that's one that really sticks out for me in terms of the ones that got me into the whole genre.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about what's been great about doing this podcast, and I know you probably feel the same way about this too, Marcy, is not only kind of reacquainting ourselves with the Ozploitation genre, but also kind of discovering new films that we've never seen before, which is, I think, is probably one of the biggest thrills for me about this doing the show.
Yeah, so far, like, I've barely had any rewatches because I haven't seen most of what we've watched before. So it is a big journey, and as of this episode, I believe we would have watched 37 films so far.
Wow.
Indeed, that is at least about 8 years worth of Ozploitation.
Yeah, yeah. As of this episode, it takes us to 1977 and 1978, I believe.
Indeed. And we have quite a lot of interesting films to discuss on this episode today. All of various degrees of quality, but also kind of in terms of like what genres they tackle as well. Mm-hmm. So for this episode of the Ozploit cast, we're going to be talking about the films Journey Among Women, Summer City, Raw Deal, Patrick, and The Scalp Merchant. So we'll get right to it since we have a lot of movies to discuss. And we'll start with our very first film, which of course is the 1977 film Journey Among Women. Was directed by Tom Cowan, written by Tom Cowan, John Whaley, and Dorothy Hewitt. And this film stars June Pritchard, Nell Campbell, Diana Fuller, Lisa Pierce, Robert Morse, and many others. And the plot summary for this film, which, and I've slightly tweaked this a little bit so it sounds a bit more PC, is in colonial Australia, a daughter of a judge helps a group of female convicts living in inhuman conditions escape. An Indigenous Australian girl teaches them how to survive in the forest. One of them gets raped and killed. The group seeks revenge. Now, Marcy, this is your first time watching Journey Among Women. Now, I was very curious to hear your thoughts on this film. Can you tell us what you thought of this film?
Yes, indeed. I believe this was the first time watching it for all three of us. And as this is kind of a bit of a feminist film, yes, the woman should go first. Each and every time.
Indeed.
Yes, burn the colonizers, fuck off the patriarchy. That's what I got out of this film. No. Yeah, actually, I was really, really surprised by this one. It starts off, it does have those exploitation elements where, and yeah, trigger warning or content warning because we are going to discuss sexual assault. Yeah, it starts off with the, we'll just call them the colonizers, basically assaulting the female prisoners. It's not pleasant. It's quite horrible. It's not done to, it's there. It's actually presented as something that just happens. And then as it progresses and these women start fighting back, it takes this very different turn and they, you know, try to just live off the land and have their own, like, Garden of Eden, so to speak, without the men. And when something bad happens, they go out and seek revenge. And what's interesting about this film, like, looking at it, it's from 1977, but you can see things in this movie that, you know, elements of the more recent film, The Nightingale. So I'm positive this surely would have had to have inspired parts of that in some way. There's, you know, elements of like I Spit on Your Grave as well, which not the most pleasant of experiences. So it really is this very, I would say strange in a way, because you think it's one thing, it turns out to be something else completely. There's a bit of walkabout in there in a way as well. And yeah, you're just really with these main female characters as they try to escape the evil colonizers and just try and they're trying to live peacefully, but when that doesn't quite work, it's all bets are off. I was very surprised and moved by this film. It is definitely a feminist film. It is kind of, I guess if you put it in a, it's very art housey for an exploitation type film. So it's kind of in between a little bit of these things. It's just, wow. Yeah. I feel like I'm just waffling on a little bit, so somebody else talk a bit more about this film. Oh, before I start, I will add, when there is like nudity in this film, I don't feel like it's overly sexualized in any way. It's just there. It's not meant to be this titillating experience, and I found that quite interesting. But yes, someone else please speak up now.
Well, John, this was your first time watching Journey Among Women. Tell us your thoughts on this film.
Yeah, it was quite a discovery. I had heard of it, but I never seen it. And I didn't really know what to expect. But yeah, because originally I remember seeing the cover of this, yes, Woman with an Axe. I just saw, I saw some sort of exploitation film. But you're right, Marcy. It is more of a, it has an art house sensibility to it, but a little bit of exploitation chucked in. So I was really surprised because, yeah, like I said, it's quite horrific, the first half in regards to what these women go through in regards to rape and torture. And there's, you're right, there's nothing really sexual about it. That's what I actually had here in my notes. It's actually a very dirty film. Like you actually feel really grubby for the first first bit when they're in that. You know, that horrible environment with obviously the the colonial guards who are having their way with them. But yeah, like I said, and then I wasn't really sure where the movie was going, but then obviously when they break out, the movie does become much, much more human in a way when they meet the indigenous girl and they go off. And you're right, Marcy, I did have these vibes, walkabout, and it kind of makes you think who the real savages are, like, you know, the actual beast colonials or the actual native people, because the colonial people are just horrible. They're
they really are the true savages in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and I love how
I love how it kind of conveys that through, you know, the girl who's the only like human character they meet in the film. Everyone else is just horrible.
Yeah.
So it's very horrible characters, but you know, the rape revenge part comes into play, and that's when it kind of, like I said, kind of kicks off into exploitation. But like I said, I was quite pleasantly surprised by this film. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it's took me back. Really did. That's one of the more unusual rape revenge films.
Quite different.
Very different. Yeah.
And Bede.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect. I think like John, I'd seen this movie around for quite a while now, especially like, you know, at DVD shops or even on, I think I saw it on Prime Video at one point and I just saw it scrolling past. And I'm like, oh, Journey Among Women, Aussie kind of revenge film. It sounds pretty interesting. I'll put that on the docket for, you know, for a future watch at some point. But I think what really sort of sold me about watching this film was, of course, your description of it, Marcy, which you sent to me. It was like, oh, this film is kind of like I Spit on Your Grave meets The Nightingale meets Walkabout. And that kind of just sold me on the film even more so. So I at least had a bit of an idea what to expect going into it. And I got to say, like, this is definitely a major discovery. And I'm surprised that more people aren't really talking about this film as much like as we are right now, because it is, I think what makes this film so interesting, like it is, starts off with these women who are being horribly treated by all these colonial soldiers, whether they be being beaten up or assaulted or raped. And like you said, it's kind of to a point now with these characters, like this has happened to them so many times, they're just used to it, which is kind of just very disturbing. But once they sort of get free, but and let out by the judge's daughter, who in the film is played by June Pritchard, who plays Elizabeth. Like, then they go on the run into the bush, and you, and where it sort of follows from there, it came across almost like a documentary at times, because I'm kind of curious, like, how scripted most of this film was, because it seemed to me like in the scenes when they're out in the bush by themselves, learning how to survive, them hanging out, and like, they just, they felt like a naturalism to everything that was going on in these scenes, and it just didn't feel like it was scripted. It's almost like that Tom Cowan, the director and co-writer, was like, okay, well, we'll start filming, and he just told all the actresses to kind of just improvise stuff on the spot, and this is some of the things they came out with, and it just felt almost organic and real in these scenes, and where it sort of goes from there is just so gripping and also very, like, complex in terms of how it deals with its themes. Also, particularly with Elizabeth, who was at first very happy to free all these women, but then she gets conflicted about whether she wants to stay with the group or go back to civilization. Like, it's an interesting sort of character arc that she goes through, but it's really just a really exceptional film that I just found so compelling from beginning to end. And it, like I said, it's kind of shocking to me that this film isn't as talked about as it should have been.
I was about to say, yeah, the improvised scenes are, I'm pretty sure it was improvised, but I was going to say that's the best scenes where they generally have, like, they're actually having fun. Like, it's very genuine. And you can tell that they're, and it really helps the characters because now they're free. They haven't, you know, experienced this in a long time, what freedom is. And they're really having a ball just doing various activities. So, that's probably one of the more interesting parts of the film.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of in Walkabout, where the three of them are just swimming and having fun. It's just this innocence, and it's the same with when you see them free and they're just able to relax and have fun. It reminded me just like that. It's this innocence of just wanting to be free of what the, you know, colonizers have done to them. So I felt it had a power in it that was showcased really well. And when it does veer into the more exploitation genre elements, I still think it comes off, it's done pretty well. And as John said, it does feel very, very dirty as well. But I think it kind of works in its favor in doing so. But yeah, like, I was completely surprised by this film. Something that was very thought-provoking and very powerful. And, you know, this is like, it's another story of, you know, that those times in Australia's history, but through, I guess, more of the female point of view, which is surprising, again, for the time, because we've seen, and we will discuss, how very male-orientated the films are, where women are just there for their boobs and whatnot. So, yeah. I don't know if you guys have anything else you wanted to add or...
Well, I agree in the sense that this film just feels very dirty. And I'm not talking about, like, the tone or anything like that, just the kind of the visual style. And I feel like it really sort of captures the period of which this story is set extremely well. And again, it just makes it so believable. And it just adds another layer to the film. But also, I think with... Like, even though most of the stars in this film, like, they're kind of lesser known actors. Like, most of them I've never even seen in other projects before. But there is one name in the cast, and that's Nell Campbell, a.k.a. Little Nell from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, plays the role of Meg in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize this till, like, literally after I watched the film.
I just think they just look so... Everyone, yeah, it just looks so different. Everyone looks so rugged and rough and, covered in dirt most of the time. So it's hard to identify.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, it's definitely an interesting film because it does kind of straddle that line between being sort of more art house and exploitation, as you've both already said. But I think that's what kind of makes it a very interesting film in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it does.
It's a very mature film in a sense that it takes its subject pretty seriously. It's not, you know, like I Spit on Your Grave, where some would argue does, but I consider that extreme exploitation, and especially the second half when you've got dicks being cut off and stuff. But yeah, this film,
as they should be,
there is a revenge. There is a revenge aspect, but the revenge is done in a very mature way, and I think it definitely doesn't go across that line. It keeps it, and I think I'm not sure. Like I said, Bede, I'm just shocked this film's not known. I even told a mate of mine, a Scottish guy, he's a huge Ozploitation fan. He hadn't even heard of this film.
Oh, so, wow, yeah,
it kind of amazes me. So it's not particularly more known.
Yeah, this movie needs to be a lot more well known, and I think Umbrella released it on DVD. I don't know if it's on Blu. There's no Blu-ray, is there? It's just a DVD.
No, but
it would fit perfectly for their odds. Hopefully, their odds.
Yeah, well, the DVD I have, like the print they used for the DVD, definitely looked very beat up, and it did look a little hard to see at times, especially in the night scenes. So hopefully there is like a print out there that they can rescan and restore and like bring this film back out to the masses. I mean, even if it's like some people might be slightly disappointed when they see the cover of the movie, it's like there's not really enough like women killing people with axes, but it's but hopefully they realize, you know, there's a lot more going on that actually makes it a much more rewarding film other than just, you know, being an exploitation film.
Yeah. Well, Umbrella, if you're listening, get on this. And I'm going to say this again later in the episode. And I'm sorry, John, I cut you off, my friend.
No, just saying I hope they still have the rights, because that would be great.
Yeah, well, let's find out who's got the rights and let's get this shit going, damn it.
Let's get it out. Yes. I was going to say, because, you're right, B, that's the thing, that cover. It strangely put me off. I don't know why. I remember seeing it. I'm just like, I just don't know. Is that like... I just don't know what it was, the cover, but I think the original poster art's quite interesting. It looks more like an art house film, but doesn't really show. So they need to find some sort of good balance in between to reissue it to get a new audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely. Well, needless to say, I think we all really enjoyed this film.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah, exactly. And Marcy, what rating and final thoughts do you give Journey Among Women?
Yes. So my rating is 4. I'm going to get rid of the colonizers out of 5. I think it is a great film, and I will probably rewatch this again. And as I said on my Letterboxd review, burn the colonizers and burn the patriarchy.
Yes.
Indeed.
And John, what is your rating and final thoughts for this film?
Yes, so I was just checking my letterbox. I did give this 4 rusty axes out of 5. Certainly, just a great film, great discovery. People really need to see it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and one of the more unusual exploitation films, in a sense that it takes its subject matter very seriously. And definitely enjoyed it.
And Bead.
I would give this about 4.5 out of 5. I really enjoy, I mean, probably enjoy is not the best word, was really engaged by it a lot. And like, I think it is definitely without a doubt a very feminist film. And looking up on one of the co-writers of this film, Dorothy Hewitt, who was, you know, a well-known Australian feminist poet, writer, and playwright. So this would definitely, she definitely added a lot to this film, for sure. But I think it's just a really compelling film that just from the beginning to end, it sort of hooks you in with its story. Like it is definitely a movie that I think for some people have to be very wary of, since it does deal with sexual assault and rape as some of the topics that it explores in the film. But I think that it's still one that's worth checking out. And if you're up for it, if you're daring to, do it as a double feature with The Nightingale. I think it would make an interesting sort of back-to-back watch, for sure.
Yes, I did say that on Twitter, I think. Or to you, actually, yes. I don't know.
Yes. But anyway. I'll give you all credit to it, Marcy.
Yes, it was my idea of one shut up. Nah. All right, next movie.
Indeed. So we're going from a movie that's all about women to a movie that's all about men, which, of course, is the 1977 drama thriller Summer City.
Summer City, where the might sound stupid, but more a way of life, I suppose. Say, if you got any problems or worries or anything like that, there's the place to go. Just take them all out there and thrash it out on the way.
If I'd known, right, you had a staked up, I wouldn't have gone here with a bloody barge pole.
I believe.
Yeah, you look like you believe me.
I do. In fact, in the middle of nowhere, you want to be bloody sure it's the right way.
Listen, if you want to get out, there's a door, all right?
Well, can't you think of anything except surf and sex? None of you know where we are.
I thought she seemed like the faithful kind.
Yeah?
Who was he?
I don't know.
What was his name?
Boys, get our stuff.
Yeah, great.
Social intolerance and misunderstanding are the perfect partners in the trial facing the court. Are we to judge the prisoner purely on his actions or his motives? Is he guilty through provocation or impulse?
Which was directed by Christopher Frazier, written and produced by Phil Avalon. This one stars John Jarrett, Phil Avalon, Steve Bisley, Mel Gibson, and Abigail. And the plot summary for this film, which once again I am reading off IMDb, is the exploits of four boys who leave Sydney and head out for a weekend of surfing and adventure. Unfortunately, the fun takes a serious turn when they find themselves involved in a murder. Now, we'll switch things around a little bit. Since, Marcy, we heard from a female's perspective when it came to Journey Among Women, which is definitely the most appropriate way to start off the discussion on that film. Now, I'm going to move things around, and since, John, this is a film about men, tell us your thoughts about Summer City.
Yes, Summer City. So, first time watch. It's not a particularly good film, but it's a fascinating film in the sense that it stars a young Mel Gibson. And it's funny, when I was looking at this film, all I found was really bad photoshops of Mel Gibson as, like, you know, an older Mel Gibson as the star. Summer City, Mel Gibson. And it looks like some sort of comedy. It's a very unusual film. I didn't like it, but once again, it was kind of like a train wreck for some reason, this film, because you've got these male characters that are... I'm not sure if the film is... wanting to portray them as complete, like, the most horrible people you could ever meet, these guys going on this road trip, or whether it's just that's how the director didn't intend it to, and that's just how they are. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, I can't tell if this movie is trying to make these people look bad or whether it's trying to make them look like heroes, these characters. It was one of the most... it's just a mishmash of various things, like a road trip... sort of revenge film, you know, Summer Gone Wrong. I really can't describe it. I'm a little bit muddled by it all. But like, so the first half of it, I was really enjoying. Well, not really enjoying, because they were such horrible characters, but I was actually kind of getting into it, actually, in terms of the plot. Like, yeah, they're going on this trip, what's going to go wrong? And then it just kind of plods along. And yeah, they're not very nice people. And then there's these weird themes in the film, which I just can't. People a bit, but with this daughter and her father, and I'm lost for words for this movie. It's a very bizarre film, and it's a mishmash of all these genres that don't really mix. And but once again, kind of a fascinating train wreck. I just don't know how to summarize it. Excuse me.
Now, Marcy, I know you have a lot to say about Summer City. Tell us your thoughts on this film.
I did not like this movie. This was a chore to get through. And as John said, like, yeah, they're just horrible characters. So you've got a group of horrible young men who go for a beach trip. All they do is try to score with girls. and they're pretty much underage, and they get coerced into having sex, which is essentially, not essentially, it is statutory rape. Let's not beat around the bush here. And I just found it really disgusting. The behavior that they were showing, it's really appalling. And they just go around thinking they can do whatever, saying whatever. And then it just suddenly comes in that one of the 15-year-old girls, she gets blamed, A, because everything that happened, and she thinks she might be pregnant. And then she tells the dad, and the dad's like, well, I'm going to go shoot the guy. And the John Jarrett, right? Yes. His character suddenly has a gun and is thinking about killing the guy, but all of this just doesn't amount to anything. It doesn't feel like there's genuine consequences because women are an afterthought in this film. And the dad character killing the guy, okay, yeah, the guy probably deserved to get shot, but what is it? What is any of it saying? It's not saying anything, really. Because then the dad gets shot by John Jarrett's character, who was just losing his mind. He's like a, you know, this guy was pretty much just waiting for a chance to get a weapon to kill people. And he pretty much gets away with it. And I don't know what this movie wanted to say. I didn't find it interesting. It's kind of, you know, yeah, okay. It's a very early role from Mel Gibson, and you can see, like, he is more, I think he's a lot more noticeable. He's definitely showing, or at least in this, you know, there's a lot of charisma. So you can see how he ended up breaking out as a star. But yeah, this film is, it's not good. It's just, ugh. I mean, yeah.
I was about to say, Miles, that's the thing. I couldn't figure out if their actions were being, you know, looked upon as this disgusting or if it's being glorified. I can't tell. And that's the thing I have with this film. I mean, these characters, like, anyway.
I'm
just really confused by it all. It feels like they're making up as they were going along.
It does. Because they spend most of this movie just doing nothing. And then the last 10 minutes, there's something happening. It's like, this is not how you do it.
It's like they were writing the script as they went along on a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's
tissue.
Yeah, it's real. Yeah, I didn't like it. I don't recommend it. It says something when I would probably prefer to sit through Phantasm Comes Again over this. There you go.
Well, where to start with Summer City? Like, this movie, I would say it's definitely not a good movie at all. Like, there's just so many... Like, John, I am just perplexed by this film. Like, I think even before I even sat down to watch it, I'd heard about this film for years because I think one of the big main things that most people know about this film is, of course, like, it's the very first film starring Mel Gibson. This was, like, his first big major acting role. And, of course, it has early appearances from both John Jarrett and Steve Bisley as well. So, and I just kept assuming, like, based on, you know, the poster and just, like, seeing all the weird DVD covers that are on this movie that pretty much just promote Mel Gibson on the front of the covers, even though he's, like, only fourth billed in this film and he's a supporting character.
They're all, like, kind of supporting characters in a way. It does kind of focus more with Steve Bisley's character. But the others are in it enough. Like, they're all kind of there. But, yeah. I know what you mean. Well, but, yes, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I guess, and I just assume, it's just like Summer City based on the title and just everything I've seen. It's probably just some kind of breezy kind of, you know, comedy. That's what I just assumed.
Yeah,
same.
I thought it was some sort of beach movie. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, even the poster that, like, the film's well-known poster does not give off the vibe that this is sort of like a dark drama thriller. And sort of sitting there watching it, like, I agree that these characters are definitely not likable. I guess the only one who kind of even resembles not totally unlikable is John Jarrett's character, because his character is meant to be kind of like the moral compass of this film.
Yeah, but he's totally not, because he ends up victim blaming the girl. So I'm like, well, there goes his moral compass, because he's being a wanker.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
And then he pretty much wants to go kill everyone. Like, what the fuck? I think I said to you about how this movie wraps up. I'm like, what is this ending? Was this him prepping to play Mick Taylor in 20 years? Like, what the fuck? But anyway, sorry. I keep interjecting just because this movie makes me angry.
Well, that's understandable, but I'm just sort of speaking because, like, at least the only one who's trying to at least make some, trying to do the right thing, because this is basically, this whole event is basically like his last ride because he's about to get married. And of course, like, during the trip, he is like getting fed up with everyone's shit on the trip, particularly Steve Bisley's character, which I will admit, here's the thing about Steve Bisley. His character is completely horrible, but I thought he did a good job of playing such a horrible character, because you just absolutely hate him from the first minute you see him right until the very end.
Mm.
And I just don't know exactly what this film is trying to say. Like, is it meant to, like it's very confused on what message it's trying to give. Like, is it this film like definitely condemning these guys' actions, and then basically what happens, like, if you end up being a complete massive dickhead and just treat people horribly, like, you're just going to have your comeuppance in the end, or, you know, tragedy is going to happen or something like that? Or is it kind of condoning their actions? Like, I'm not exactly sure. Like, I keep going back and forth, but particularly whether it's actually condemning them, because earlier in the film, or at least around the halfway mark, like, there's a scene where Steve Bisley's character goes to this bar and tries to chat up to this older woman who's played by Abigail, who we've talked about many times on this show, last few episodes. And, like, she kind of gives, like, she pretty much tears the guy down. Like, and just says, like, oh, you know, like, to the point where he says, like, oh, you think you're just top shit, but you're nothing but a complete wanker. And it's not like, you know, just telling him to piss off and then going on his way. She really, like, strips him down to his, to the bone, in terms of, like, showing how much of an insecure, narcissistic a-hole his character actually is. So I guess, I just don't know where, like, that's the thing where it makes me think, this is maybe Phil Avalon, who also, besides writing this movie, also produced and starred in it as well, is definitely condemning these guys' characters. But I don't know, it feels like it's kind of, with the other things that are happening in this film, where certain decisions of other characters or where the story goes, it just feels like it's never really 100%. It keeps going back and forth whether it condones or condemns these characters. Like, it's, I will admit, like, John, it makes it kind of both fascinating as well as a weird, like, tonal shift of a movie. But it, I don't know, it just didn't really come together for me. And again, it's not to say that unlikable characters can't be really interesting. And I think the actors, despite the unlikability of their characters, still do a good job portraying how completely unlikable these characters are, particularly Steve Bisley. But yeah, it just never really comes together as a whole, and I feel like it's trying to be a lot of things, but yeah, it just ends up becoming more of the sum of its parts rather than being a consistent whole, if that makes any sense.
It just feels like they made this up as they were going along. I don't know what the actual freaking purpose was meant to be. And I forgot to add, there is so much pointless freaking surfing in this movie. It was putting me to sleep. But yeah, I did not like this. I do not recommend this. It is not a good movie. These characters are fucking horrible. They're about as fucking annoying and as horrible as, you know, the first half of The Babadook with the kid screaming the whole fucking time. All right? That's how annoying these characters are. They should burn in hell. Anyway.
Well, I think that's a little too harsh, but that's just me.
No.
But,
terrible.
I meant about the kid, but
oh, no, that kid's an annoying little shit in that movie. He's supposed to be, but that's beside the point. He is.
Yeah, I guess that could be a wrap on our conversation of Summer City. John, what is your rating and final thoughts for this film?
Yeah, look, I gave it a 2 on Letterboxd, so 2 surfboards out of 5. Now, actually, discussing it has actually made me think about it a little bit more. Because when I first saw it, I was like Marcy, I was a little bit just annoyed by it. And like I said, I just didn't get what the point of it was. And I just thought the characters were horrible. But some of the points you brought up, Ethan, is, you know, like I said, are these characters, you know, meant to be looked down upon? Like once again, I'm not sure what it's really trying to say, this movie. But once again, as a fascinating train wreck, I must say I was entertained to a degree with this film, just with how strange it was and the performances. And so, look, I don't recommend it, but if you are looking to see something, you know, just unusual that obviously stars a young Mel Gibson, if you're a young Mel Gibson fan, and want to see him in an early role. But yeah, apart from that, this is a very strange mishmash of a film that, like I said, if they had gone the direction of, you know, these bad characters having bad stuff happen to them and made it very clear from the start. But once again, I'm not really sure what this movie's trying to say. Mm. But yeah, there is surfing, and there is a line where he goes on something like, oh, mate, the surf, you know, all your problems go away in the surf or something. So, which was quite interesting. So, yeah, fascinatingly strange, bizarre mishmash of a film. So, yeah, two out of five for me.
Mm.
And Marcy, your final thoughts and rating of this movie?
I did not like this movie. This movie can fuck off. That's my plain and simple thoughts, or final thoughts. And I would give it 1.5. I would probably kill the Steve Bisley character too, just because he's so annoying, out of 5.
I guess for me, I give it about the same as John. I give it about 2 out of 5. Like, it's a fascinating train wreck of a film, like you said, John. And, like, it's definitely... I don't want to say people shouldn't check it out. I think if you're one of those people who's more like a Mel Gibson completist, or is just... I would say definitely watch this as more as a curiosity rather than anything else. Like, to see this, you know, being that this is his very first, you know, date film ever. Mm. And like you say, Marcy, I agree. Like, even though he has a... his role is smaller... in this film, like, you get the sense, like, in the scenes that he's in, that there is definitely a massive bit of charisma about him as an actor, and you could definitely see why he would go on to be a major star down the line.
Mm.
Yeah, and just want to say those once again, be those posters, gotta love them. How it looks like some fun sort of
like those posters give off like it is gonna meant to be like a fun comedic surfer movie or something like that. Like endless summer.
Yeah, I was gonna say like endless summer. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But clearly it was not.
No, not at all.
And like I said, that some of those really bizarre Photoshop jobs that you do, so you'll have a good laugh and seeing Mel Gibson. But anyway, just wanted to. That's all.
Yes. Now moving right along to our third film, which also happens to be about a group of men. And that, of course, is the 1977 Aussie Western, Raw Deal.
Raw Deal. All we gotta do is trek across the desert, locate their camp, and wipe out 100 men. A deadly mission. A hearse full of dynamite. And 5 men who dared.
Anyone moves, we all go up.
Together, they fought. They loved, they laughed.
Music? Music.
What are you doing here?
Giving the dump a bit of class.
Wait.
But the joke was on them.
Wait. I don't even know your name.
It's, Jesus Christ.
Which was directed by Russell Haig, written by Patrick Edgeworth, and this film stars Gerald Kennedy, Gus Mercurio, Rob Marliner, Christopher Pate, Hughes Bryce, Michael Carmen, and Norman Yem, And the plot summary for this film, which once again I am reading off IMDb, is: in the 1870s, the colonial administrator hires bounty hunter Palmer and gun salesman Ben to wipe out an army of Irish Catholic revolutionaries in their stronghold. Palmer and Ben recruit free gunmen to help them, and their mission is successful, but when they go to get their payment, they're trapped by treacherous officials. Ben and Palmer must fight their way to safety. Now, I know this movie was a first-time watch for all of us, but Marcy, tell us your thoughts on Raw Deal.
Yes, I really enjoyed this film. Now, I do really enjoy westerns. I am a fan of westerns, which, I don't know, maybe that's surprising to people. I have no idea. So, yeah, I was kind of looking forward to checking this one out, just knowing it was like an Aussie western, and the plot synopsis, which, funnily enough, explains the whole movie, sounded interesting. And I just got so engaged in this film. Like, you have these group of characters who are just really engaging, and you do get behind them. With Gerard Kennedy as Palmer and Gus Mercurio as Ben. And then they add in a few more people into their group as they, you know, try to do this mission for the money. But then, as it turns out, the colonial administrator is just a dickhead who didn't want to pay them. He just wanted them to get, you know, the revolutionaries out of the way. And he was intending to kill them all. And it actually just really works as for what it is. It's an adventure. They do they get into some really explosive situations, but it ends up being a sort of a mishmash of the serious, the fun, but it all blends together really, really well. And the performances are really enjoyable. The camaraderie is really great, and the action, you know, it pulls it off really, really well. Like, I really genuinely enjoyed this, and this feels like some lost film that nobody knows of. There's, like, nothing really out there about it, and I want to see this. The print of this film needs to be found. This needs to be restored. This needs to be on disc and streaming. People need to see this. It is a genuinely really damn enjoyable Australian Western.
John, what are your thoughts on Raw Deal?
Yeah, so Raw Deal, once again, a first-time watch for me, and I didn't know what to expect going in, but I absolutely enjoyed this film as well. I was completely blown away. I did not know what to expect, and you're right. Obviously, this film hasn't been remastered, but I can imagine if this was restored, how beautiful the landscape and the shots would be if we actually had a proper restoration of it. But yeah, I was really surprised because it doesn't fit. It felt more to me like a spaghetti western rather than an Australian film. It felt like something like Sergio Leone would do.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, just the tone of it felt very spaghetti western. Yeah, very tame western to me.
Mm.
And you've got these great, like I say, cast of characters that they're recruiting, and it's got like sort of a Wild Bunch vibe because I really like these characters, and especially Gus, like this American guy in this Australian film. Like, well, what is this guy doing here? But it works. It works incredibly well because obviously the colonial time, you had people from all over the world, Ireland, and you know, the US, and I like how they have digs with each other from where they're from, you know, US or Ireland. So it's I had a ball, and there's not a dull moment in it. It really moves at a breakneck speed, and thank you IMDb, we've obviously revealed the ending too, but I can go into it. But yeah, when that double cross happens, it's just a good old fashioned traditional sort of double cross western, and the final shootout's just awesome, really great action sequences in this film. And you're right, Marcy, I feel like with the revival of a lot of a lot of Aussie westerns kind of being reevaluated, particularly the more modern ones, I think this would be great to get it out there. But I really enjoy this film a lot, and I was pleasantly surprised by a film I never even heard of.
I didn't add, but it definitely has that Sergio Leone or spaghetti western type of vibe, which really works for it. And I forgot to add, but I loved the character of the young kid, Dick. He was all sorts of adorable and hilarious. He was great. And I pictured him, like, if there was a group of us, that would be Bede.
Aww.
That's you. No, but yes. you're like the really genuinely nice one who's a... He's a bit cheeky, talks a big game, but, you know, he'll stick by his friends.
Exactly.
And I think everybody probably wanted to be Gus.
Yes.
Because he was just so cool.
He's the man.
He's great.
Yeah, and I think we've seen the actor, Gus Mercurio, before, because he played the American gangster in Alvin Rides Again. But also in my research, he is the father of Paul Mercurio, the star of Strictly Ballroom.
Indeed, so. And former boxing professional as well.
Indeed. So he's lived quite an interesting life. And I would have to say I agree with both of you. I really enjoyed this film quite a lot as well. I had never even heard of this film until I actually saw it on the Wikipedia page of the list of Ozploitation films. And I'm like, what is this? And I've like read up on it. It's like, oh, it's an Aussie Western, or a meat pie Western, as we like to call them here. and I will admit, it actually... So once I put it on the list, this movie, I will admit, took a long time to find. So I had to track it down like all over the place to find it. But I did find it eventually. And I got to say, like I said, it's a really fun little Western. Like, it definitely... Like, even though it goes for 90 minutes, it does a really good job at sustaining its energy from beginning to end. And also, the characters are all very much likable and very distinct as well in terms of their personalities. And I think what I really enjoyed most about this film is, even though it's an Aussie Western, but it kind of reminded me of those sort of great men on a mission films, you know, like... The Dirty Dozen and all that, like a group of mismatched guys who get together and kind of go on a mission where, you know, where there's the possibility that they may never come back alive. On that front, the film I found really entertaining, and the performances are all really strong. And of course, like a lot of films we've covered on this show so far, Marcy, quite a number of familiar faces pop up in this film. Rob Mulliner, who was in The Set, pops in this film as Alex, the sort of debonair womanizer who, like, pretty much...
He's so great in this. That character, he's a womanizing scumbag, but the dude oozes charisma. Like, it's so good. Yeah,
and he's very loyal to everyone in the group as well.
Yeah, really enjoyed him in this, and yes, he's also in something else we'll be talking about very shortly.
Indeed, but also Norman Yim, who of course was the killer in Night of Fear, is also the Irish revolutionary leader O'Neill in this film. And I didn't realize this till like literally after the film.
Yeah, and he's really good. Like, he's got it's not the biggest role, but he's really good for when he's on screen too.
And he's not only the only Night of Fear cast member in this film. Bryony Barretts, who was in the beginning of that film as the girl who was with a horse and got killed at the beginning, she plays one of the dancers at the end of the party scene in this film as well.
Very cool.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a really fun film. Like, it's got a lot of good humor. The ending does give a bit of a punch because the guys end up getting in a bit of a shootout and most of them do get killed, which is unfortunate. And also, like, it's beautifully shot by Vince Monton, who's like a staple of Ozploitation cinema because, you know, he would shoot like Long Weekend, Snapshot, First, Road Games, and so many other films and other Ozploitation films, I should say.
Yeah, and because it does look fantastic. It's why this is screaming...
I know.
For, you know, the print needs to be found. We have to restore it. I say we. I'm going to go find it and restore it myself.
It seems like a VHS rip.
Yeah. And that's such a shame, too.
Yeah, because it's a beautifully shot film in terms of the landscapes.
Mm.
It looks restored.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, well, I guess for any of our listeners who want to check out Raw Deal and see it for themselves, it is up on archive.org. So it's easy to find there if you're interested in watching it. But yeah, well, like I said, I think this movie was only ever released on VHS and it's never gone any further than that. But I think like to see Umbrella or one of the other distributors here in Australia take a crack at this film and sort of restore it as well. Because I think it'd be, like, I could see Umbrella do this film and put it on either the Ozploitation Collection series or even the Sunburnt Screen series. Like, it could go either way in terms of which lineup they put it in.
Yeah. But hopefully, by doing this podcast, we put Raw Deal on more radars, hopefully.
Indeed, indeed.
And one thing I'll say, the other thing I loved about it, I'm quite a soundtrack person. This movie has a great soundtrack, a really great funky soundtrack. So if you do like your funky Western soundtracks, this is really great score for this movie as well, which I don't know if it's had a release anywhere, but I would like to get a copy of that soundtrack.
See, not only should Umbrella restore this film, they should put the soundtrack on the Blu-ray as well.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But we'll share our final thoughts on this film. Marcy, what are your final thoughts and rating on Raw Deal?
Yes, I give this film 3.5 explosions out of 5. It is a lot of fun. It's a very enjoyable film. And as we've just been discussing, this needs to be restored. It is a wonderful, almost lost film for Australian cinema. And I'd love more people to check this out.
And John, what are your final thoughts and rating for this film?
Yes, so I checked my letterbox, and yes, I also gave this 3.5 guns out of 5. Yes, I agree with everything you've said. By no means not a masterpiece, but if you're just after really fun, economical filmmaking that takes, 90 minutes of your time, and you obviously want to have a ball, this is the film. It's great. It's got great pacing, like I say, great score, great cinematography, and like you said, they're really likable and distinct characters that fits in with something like The Wild Bunch. It's a really great film. So, yeah, one of the more unusual meat pie films. Like, I personally just had sort of a spaghetti western vibe, but I do recommend people seek it out, and please someone restore this film, I hope. So.
Yeah, I give it about 3.5 as well. I really enjoyed this film a lot, and I think Russell Haigh, who directed this film, and this was his first and only feature film, but he did mostly like television, particularly a TV show prior to this film, which was called Cash and Company, and also Tandara. And like, I think he did a really good job directing wise, and I think Patrick Edgeworth did a pretty solid job with the screenplay. And funnily enough, doing my research, both of them would actually team up and write the script for a film we will talk about eventually on this show, and that, of course, is BMX Bandits. So we'll talk about that one in a future show. But I think I think they both did a really good job on the behind the scenes work of this film, and I think the cast are so likable and enjoyable that it just adds another layer of fun to the film, even if the plot does feel very familiar at times. But yeah, I think it's just a fun, really entertaining Aussie Western. And Australia has made quite a number of Westerns over the years, but I would say this is definitely one of the more enjoyable ones. Like, this is one that's actually setting out to be fun rather than being a bit more kind of serious in terms of how it tackles the Western genre. But we move right along to our fourth film, which is definitely the big major one of this podcast. And that, of course, is the 1978 horror film Patrick.
Ladies and gentlemen, may we introduce you to Patrick. He's playing dead. Or is he? Patrick is undergoing treatment. He isn't dead. He isn't alive.
You probably just haven't.
Only Kathy cares, understands.
Hello. Is anybody in there? What do you call it when someone has the power to make things move around the room without touching them?
Magic.
Why are you doing this? What do you want? I don't think you are cut out to be a nurse in an institution like this. It's because of Patrick, isn't it? It's because I know too much.
And no one believes her.
Brian, he's going to think I'm mad unless you say something.
Not Dr. Roget.
160 pounds of limp meat hanging off a comatose brain. Can you imagine anything less aware than that?
Not her husband.
I'd like to discuss our divorce.
Not her lover.
Detect a note of sarcasm.
Why was
not the police.
Look, Mrs. Jackard, please, let's not complicate this any further, will you?
Patrick?
Spend a night with Patrick, if you dare.
Which, of course, was directed by Richard Franklin, and this film stars Susan Panglingon, and I probably butchered her last name, so please forgive me, Robert Heltman, Rod Mulliner, again, Bruce Barry, Julia Blake, and Robert Thompson as Patrick. And the plot summary, which once again I am reading off IMDb, is a comatose hospital patient harasses and kills through his powers of telekinesis to claim his private nurse as his own. Now, John. Now, it's pretty fair to say that Patrick is a classic of Australian horror cinema. What are your personal thoughts on this film?
Oh, me?
Yes. Yes,
yes, sorry. Sorry, got out there. Yes, so Patrick. Yeah, I've grown to appreciate Patrick over the years, and I've seen it quite a few times now. I know the film quite well. When I was younger and I originally saw it, when I say younger, maybe I was 12 or 13 when I first saw it. I just wanted, you know, horror, exploitation, blood and guts, and I couldn't appreciate Patrick because I realize now that obviously it is a slow burn of a film, and obviously at the time, yeah, I just wanted something, you know, exciting. But Patrick, like I said, I've watched it. The older I get, the more I appreciate this film, and so it is a great, very unusual Australian horror film that builds tension and suspense and mystery, and it's just got, obviously Patrick himself is just a really creepy character that just sits there with his eyes open, and the great thing about the film is you don't know what's going on until it starts to get revealed later on towards the end, but just with his character spitting and typing things out, and you don't know if this woman's going insane or whether it's really happening. But a great cast, very suspenseful, and like I said, there's elements of supernatural or mixes a fair amount of genres all in one, but it manages to somehow put it all together neatly in a bow. There's so much I could say about this film, but yeah, I do like Patrick, and like I said, the more I watch it, the more I appreciate it over the years. It's one of the more, once again, I come back to this, I say it is one of the more mature sort of Australian horror films, but I like it quite a bit.
And Marcy, your thoughts on Patrick?
Yes, I think Patrick was one of the, I guess, not one of the first, but at least one that I saw after Not Quite Hollywood. Because I guess it was talked about a lot in that and I hadn't seen it. So I did see it. And I remember, I think we talked about it at length back in the day. But yeah, I actually really, really enjoy the film. I think maybe on a previous episode where we watched a film or films by Richard Franklin, I had expressed that I do like what I've seen that he's done. And this is very, like, you can see he's wearing his Hitchcock mentorship on his sleeve with this film. And I think it just really works. It is kind of hokey. Like, yeah, some of the performances are a bit funny. Not going to lie. Upon rewatching it, we did have a few laughs. But I think it just kind of adds to the experience. It is a very bizarre film because you do have this comatose patient with his eyes wide open and he just randomly spits. Quentin Tarantino borrowed heavily from the Ozploitation genre. And yeah, as it progresses, like, more and more crazy things start happening, and yeah, it does, like you said, John, it does wrap up in a neat bow with everything. It's just this very bizarrely engaging, weirdly enjoyable, but kind of horrific film. And I always get something out of it whenever I watch this. It's just a really well done, low-ish budget horror film. And I like that, at least what we're going to see and some of what we've seen, is the approach to horror is not what you may expect within the, you know, Ozploitation-ish genre. And that's what I like, that it is very different and there were a lot of chances being taken. And, like, Patrick, the character, is someone who's, like, burnt into your memory because he's so terrifying to look at. And it's kind of a very bizarre prospect that you're comatose but you have these telekinetic powers. Just imagine Kerry White being in a coma and the havoc she would wreak. It's, you know, I'm just mumbling on now, but yeah, it's, I do say it is one of my, probably one of my personal favourite little Aussie horror films. And yeah, I believe this film got Richard Franklin the role for Psycho 2, which is a fan-fucking-tastic sequel.
Indeed, indeed. I guess for me, I have a lot of love for Patrick. I think I first heard of this film, well, of course, when it was in Not Quite Hollywood, which obviously where every Ozploitation film I've ever heard ever was from that film. But I'm pretty sure I probably would have heard of it even prior to seeing that documentary. Because I think for me, and what I love so much about this film, like, this was around the sort of the late 70s. So the telekinetic horror was kind of big at this period in the 70s, because after when Carrie came out, there was just like a boom of sort of horror films that dealt with telekinesis or psychic powers. But I think what makes Patrick stand out in a lot of ways is the approach to that subject matter, which of course it starts off with Patrick killing his mum and her latest boyfriend. And then of course he goes into a coma. And since he's in a coma, his eyes are sort of wide the entire time. He never blinks at all throughout this whole film. And of course he spits, as we've mentioned before. But the fact that he's still, even when he's in a comatose state, he's still terrorizing the people around him by using psychic abilities. Now, we never know for sure, like, did he get these psychic abilities because he is in a coma, or did he have these prior to being in one? We're never really sure, and I think that's one of the questions that sort of that I like that leaves this film, I mean, leaves that aspect of the story ambiguous, because we're never really sure. But also, like, it's just a unique film in a lot of ways. I think the performances, for most part, are pretty solid. Susan Penhalgen, again, if I butcher her last name, please forgive me. I thought she was really good in the lead role of Kathy Jacquard. I thought she was really good. And of course, you know, you got Robert Altman, who most people will probably recognize as the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, as the doctor, as Dr.
Roger,
as this hospital. But he's also a legendary Australian theater actor. So, but also just like, but I think for me, what really, at least among the performances, the standout, of course, is Robert Thompson as Patrick. Even though, yes, he's pretty much just sitting in a bed the entire time, just staring.
Oh, mate, he's fucking terrifying just looking at you like that.
Oh, yeah, he is. He could make a performance where he's just sitting there staring, just look absolutely terrifying. And we've talked about him before on an old episode of the Super Podcast Master, where we talked about our top five creepiest film characters. So he was definitely on, I believe he was on my list. And there's a good reason for that, because I think Robert Thompson has this presence about him that is just so creepy and chilling. And it kind of shocks me that he didn't really do much after this. Like, he had a small bit part in the film first, and had little bit parts here and there after this film, and also some TV appearances, and then basically disappeared after that from the acting game. So, and it astonishes me, especially since he just went out of, this is his debut performance, and he just knocks it out of the game by doing a performance that on the surface looks easy, but is probably way more harder than you would expect to be. I mean, you'd have to have a lot of presence to play a character that, again, is just mainly confined to a bed throughout the whole thing. I think Richard Franklin directs the hell out of this movie. Like, there's definitely a lot of Hitchcock influence throughout this whole film, which makes sense given that he was like a Hitchcock was his mentor. So there's some really great shots that were done courtesy of future Oscar-nominated cinematographer Donald McAlpine. And also Everett DeRoach, who this was his first big major film screenplay, and he wrote a lot of TV prior to this. But, you know, based on this film, he would be a massive player in the Ozploitation movement because he would write pretty much most of the Ozploitation films that came out after this one, including some well-known Australian horror classics. Like, this film is, like, every aspect of this film for me, for most part, actually works. Like I said, it's creepy, it's got a compelling story, the characters are all pretty solid. I mean, it's a little too long in the tooth. Like, it maybe could have, like, trimmed it down a little bit so the pacing didn't feel a little slow at times. But even then, Patrick is, without a doubt, a classic of Australian cinema, but not just Australian horror cinema, and one that, you know, has shown that has stood the test of time since it was released, in the years since it was released in 1978.
Indeed, indeed. It is amazing. It's great to watch.
And of course, you know, indeed. And of course, as we stated before, Rod Molinar is in this film. playing a guy that Kathy is interested in, who she thinks will help him out. But of course, he has his own motives as well. So I thought he was really good in this film. But I mean, there's a lot to say about Patrick. I mean, I remember writing in a whole column on this film back for thescreencast.com back in the day for my Horror Down Under series. So if people want to check out more of my further thoughts on this film, they can check it out there. But I mean, like I said, it's just a classic of Australian horror cinema that everyone should definitely check out if they haven't seen it.
Yes, Patrick is probably a must-see. I don't know why people haven't seen it. Go see it. You're being ridiculous.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I guess we could wrap up our conversation on Patrick. John, what are your final thoughts and rating for this film?
Yeah, look, like I said, Patrick, I really enjoyed it on this rewatch again. I'm quite familiar with the film now. Yeah, like I said, I think everyone should see it. It's an Ozploitation essential, I think. You know, it's one of the prime examples. And like I said, having this chat, it did make me appreciate the role of Patrick because, yeah, it's definitely not an easy performance. And the way that it is performed and, you know, just that creepiness to it and even just with little motions when he's trying to talk, it's genuinely unnerving. So yeah, look, definitely a great film. I do agree, it is a little bit sluggish at times in terms of pacing, but once it does get ramped up towards the end, it does go bonkers. So yeah, like I said, great film. I give it 3.5 comas out of 5.
And what about you, Barcy? What is your final thoughts and rating for this film?
Yes, Patrick is an absolute classic. I really enjoy this film. I think everyone should see it. Just for the fact it is one of the most well-known Ozploitation Australian horror films, and Richard Franklin was a great director. So yeah, I give it a 4 spitting while you're in a coma out of 5.
Well, I pretty much kind of said my thoughts on it before, like it seemed like my final thoughts anyway, but I guess my rating for this one would be a 4 out of 5. Like I said, it's a great film, it's a great Australian horror film, definitely one of the classics of, you know, Australian horror, and one that if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. And like you said, John, it's an essential film that any Ozploitation fan needs to see if they want to get into this movement of film. So we'll move right along to our fifth and final film, which of course is the 1978 TV movie, The Scalp Merchant.
Ryan here, get me fast, will you? One moment, please. Mr. Fault, Mr. Rowan's calling long distance. Will you take the call?
All right, put him on. Yes?
Mr. Fault?
Yes, what do you want?
What do I want? I want to know what's happening. I've just had a number done on me to buy two heavies that told me to get out of town.
They're the
facts. Yeah, that's a fact. They were waiting for me, and they know exactly who I am. Can you explain that for me?
Why should I be able to explain it?
Well, because you're the only one who knew I was coming here in the first place. Now, who the hell are they?
I'm sure I don't know. But it sounds like it might be wise for you to do as they say.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. We've got a deal. I recover that money for your company and I keep my 10%, right?
I'm afraid not. The situation's changed since we made that arrangement.
What do you mean?
Well, putting it simply, Mr. Rowan, the deal is off.
Oh, no, wait. I'm still going after that money. And after I found it... You still don't want to deal with me? That's okay.
Young Cliff Rowan, isn't it?
Annie, good day.
I haven't seen you for long. Must be getting on for 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's 13.
13 yeah. Years. Well, where'd it go? Hey, when'd you get in?
Just now.
Oh, hey. Reckon the old place hasn't changed much.
No, not much, really.
Which was directed by Howard Ruby, written by Ian McCollum and Roger Myrams. This film stars John Waters, Elizabeth Alexander, Ron Hardrick, Rick Hutton, and Cameron Mitchell. And the plot summary for this film is a private investigator is brought in to help recover the dough that was stolen from an Australian timber company and thinks that the box the money was taken in has been hidden in a lake. Now, Marcy, this was a first-time watch for all of us three, the Scout Merchant. Tell us your thoughts on this film.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to have all that much to say because I did not really think much of this film. It was just kind of, it's the best way to put it. It was a bit of a slog to get through. I thought this one would be like a fun action movie, but it wasn't really. Like, the action scenes are pretty decent, the performances are okay, but ultimately it's just so confusing. It's so difficult to kind of work out what's going on and why. It's it tries to be a bit of a fish out of water type of story, but it's not really. It's just this bloke goes to this town where he's from and everybody fucking hates him and all this shit, and I don't know. It was just there. I didn't think it was particularly interesting. I don't remember all that much, and I only watched this yesterday. So that should tell you everything. Yeah.
John, what are your thoughts on The Scout Merchant?
Yeah, look, I actually watched this a few days ago, so I recall less of it. but it's... it's a very film, and I was not a fan of it either. I like I said, it starts off with a bang, like this, you know, escape from this prison. Oh, wow, this is like some sort of really going to be some sort of, you know, maybe some sort of heist movie or something. But then it just goes to this bloke in the town, and like you said, Marcy, no one really likes him. And I couldn't tell if he was a detective or what was going on. And he's investigating and these conspiracies and people trying to kill him. And I personally, I don't know if it's just me, and like I said, I watched this movie completely sober and tried to make sense of it, but I was just really confused by the film. Like, I didn't really understand, like, who was who, what was going on. I don't know, but like I said, it's not bad, but it just is a bit of a slog. And and like I said, you've got some great actors, like, you know, like the great Cameron Mitchell even appears in it, which really kind of blew me away, because I'm a big fan of pretty much a lot of the films he's been in. So he's in there as well as a supporting role. But a strange, confusing, bit of a slow film that I was a little bit confused by in terms of plot. But it's something different, I'll say that.
Yeah, well, I didn't know what to expect from The Scout Merchant. All I knew that it was a TV film. That was pretty much the only thing I knew about it. And also, the title is also really cool as well. Like, you kind of have a bit of an expectation based on that title alone. Unfortunately, there is neither nor scalping or merchants in this film, so I don't know why it's called that. But
well, a scalp merchant, they do explain what it is in the film. It's like the private investigator, for a private investigator. But yeah. Yeah, they do mention, I think it's the slang for private investigator
Because what he's meant to be, the scalp merchant. Yeah. Kind of like a freelancing detective.
Basically.
Oh, okay, I was not aware of this. I see, this is why I should
The audio was pretty terrible on this movie, so...
Well, I think that
Yeah, that
help
is
as
true.
Well.
Yeah,
and there's no exactly. sub, there's no closed captioning. The audio was very poor, so that probably didn't help.
Yeah, exactly, and I guess the quality of this film, since basically, again, like Raw Deal, this is on archive.org as well. For anyone who's interested wanting to watch it, they can go there to find it. But of course, unlike Raw Deal, this is even more of a beat up VHS copy of this film. And like, it's at times like the audio is not the greatest at all. And it's a bit hard to kind of decipher what some of the characters are saying most of the time, because I mean, I was able to pick up enough to at least get the gist of what's going on. But even then, like, the plot, I just didn't find all that interesting. And it probably didn't help that it came across as a bit muddled at times as well. And like, there's some aspects of the story that just did not really make that much sense to me, at least on a narrative kind of level. That being said, though, there are some things about it I did like. I thought the performances, all for most part, were all pretty solid. I thought John Waters was actually was pretty solid in the lead role as this kind of unlikely action star. And I thought he did quite well in the part. And I thought the supporting cast were all pretty solid as well. But for me, I guess the one performance that for me kind of stood out the most was the character of Joe, the actress who played her, which I'm trying to find who she is, but unfortunately IMDb is not helping me out in that department. because it has I think it might have been either Elizabeth Alexander or Margaret Nelson, but it doesn't have the character's name either side of them, so I'm just going to assume it's one of those two. So, see, IMDb, you should be doing much better with updating your character names. But I digress. But I thought that character was really interesting. And I thought some of the action set pieces were pretty solid as well. But outside of that, though, yeah, it's kind of just a pretty forgettable movie in a lot of ways. And I could definitely see why this film has kind of gone on the wayside in terms of Australian cinema or even just Australian TV films, because there's nothing really much to this one that's really compelling. And pretty much, like, as soon as you watch it, you basically just forget about it until, like, a few days later. Like, there's nothing really in it that's all that memorable or interesting.
I wish I watched it like yesterday, because I watched it a few days ago, and yeah, it's faded, disintegrated from my memory. I just found, like I said, the plot was it wasn't the clearest, and once again, I don't know if that was a technical thing with the actual presentation, which gives unfair advantage, but yeah, it's just not just being a muddled plot can make it very forgettable.
Yeah, and I guess it's like, you know, with a lot of action films that have been made around this time or even one since, it's like the story for this one is just not that interesting. And again, it sort of deals with corruption and stuff like that. But yeah, but it kind of dives in, like, since we're sort of seeing everything from John Waters' point of view and he's trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah, it just becomes, as he sort of dives into the mystery of what's happening, it's just like, it just gets more and more muddled as it goes along. And it got to a point where I've sort of forgot like what half the story was even about.
Yeah, it was just there. I don't really remember it too well, to be honest.
Yeah, it actually felt for me almost like, I don't know if this was always intended to be just a TV movie or if it was meant to be maybe like a feature-length pilot for a TV show. Because I could see, like, this could have easily have been a TV show with John Waters going on with his character going on all these adventures, like trying to solve particular crimes or investigate, like, people and that. But yeah, it kind of had this TV movie feel, and it makes sense because Howard Ruby, who directed this film, did most of his work was TV work. So that's probably what the film kind of reminded me most, is basically like a feature-length episode of a TV show. In a way, kind of similar to how Sidecar Races was.
Yeah, it's not very memorable.
Indeed, indeed. Although I got to say, though, now looking at the poster, it's like the poster really does not reflect most of what this happens in this movie at all.
No, it really doesn't. Just about all the only poster I think that kind of does the trick. Depends on the post you see for Patrick, but Raw Deal looks like a fun Western. But yeah, the other three, the artwork's like, no.
Yes, yeah, Scout Merchant. Yeah. Art. And I'm looking at this guy with the helicopter and the gun and some exploding cars, and this looks awesome, but no.
It's not to say some of that stuff isn't in the movie, but clearly the main actor is not John Waters. That's definitely not him on the cover. Yes.
It is not.
There's nothing really much to say about this film, so I guess we'll wrap up our discussion on this film. Marcy, what are your final thoughts and rating for The Scout Merchant?
Look, maybe if the quality of the film was better in terms of, like, not a really bad VHS rip, and maybe with some closed captioning, maybe it would have made a bit more sense and I could have got what was going on. But, yeah, it wasn't too particularly engaging. But there's, you know, it's not all that offensive or anything. So I give it 2, I don't know what's really going on, out of 5. I suppose an interesting little, one to see kind of a TV movie from the late 70s.
Indeed. And, John, what are your final thoughts and rating for the film?
So with The Scout Merchant, I give it 2 exploding helicopters out of 5, even though not much of that happens. We could be giving it a disadvantage because of, like you said, Mark, the technical quality could be influencing our decision. But I just found that in terms of plot, it was just very muddled and they weren't very clear where they wanted to go with it. But having said that, like I said, the pros to it, definitely there's some really great performances in it. Got a very good cast. And unfortunately, if this had a really suspenseful or clear plot, I would have definitely put this in a high ranking, maybe one of the better exploitation films, actually. But because it is just so muddled and at times plodding, unfortunately has brought my rating down. But like I said, once again, a curiosity, if you want to check it out just because of the cast, definitely please do so. Because like I said, it has got a fairly good cast of exploitation veterans, including a great Cameron Mitchell as well from the US. So, definitely give it a watch out of curiosity, but don't expect anything to make much sense. But that's what I give it.
Yeah, I'm pretty much kind of same with both of you. I've given this 2 out of 5 as well. I mean, I'm not offended by this film at all. It's kind of just, like, it is watchable, but it's just mainly just there. And I guess after kind of, talking about other great action films we've talked about on this show so far, like The Man from Hong Kong or Death Cheaters, which are so entertaining and so energetic and fun, this one just kind of felt very basic and just not as entertaining as it could have been. Even though there are some decent action set pieces in there, but nothing that sort of thrilled me as much as the other action films we've discussed on this show so far. The cast were fine, but yeah, it's just kind of a very forgettable and not so interesting action film. So that'll be a wrap on episode 8 of the Ozploit cast. Thank you, Marcy, for always being an awesome co-host, as per usual.
You're very welcome.
And John, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about these Ozploitation films with us.
No, thank you. I appreciate you having me on. I enjoyed it. And thank you for helping me discover some Ozploitation films I would have never even seeked out. Like, I would have never even heard of that film. And same with Journey Among Women. So for the definite pros that there were discoveries, there was obviously 2 cons, but the others were all solid. So yes, no, thank you. It was a great experience.
Indeed. You're very much welcome, and you're always welcome to come back anytime to the show.
Yes, please. Yes, definitely. 100% will take you up on
that. Excellent. I'm sure we have lots of guest spots if you want to binge watch 5 movies in 2 days or whatever the hell we do on this show.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I'm
but,
keen.
But
excellent.
Yes. Awesome. Before we end the episode, Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
They can always find us at supermarcy.com. And if you want to check out everything we do, just check out the link tree at linktr.ee/thesupernetwork. And you can find all our social medias, and you can find the the Super Network podcast feed, or you can look up the Ozsplitcast in your podcast players. And if you want to find me, you can find me at Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. And I'm also on Letterboxd at super_Marcy.
And Job, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Yes, you can find me on the internet. I am one of the co-hosts of Indicator Cast, and also, like you mentioned earlier, Bede, we've just launched Imprint Cast. So you can find us on the Imprint Blu-ray fan page that we put up, fan group, where we discuss all things Imprint, and also the Indicator fan page we also have, which is another group. So very active on all those groups, and you can find our podcast on all the streaming networks out there. So yes, give it a listen.
Awesome. And people want to find me personally, they can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/bjamine, or my Letterboxd account at letterboxd.com/bjamine. And of course, you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com with all my reviews and columns. So yep, that's a wrap on episode 8 of the Ozsploitcast. We hope all of you, our audience, enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned for next month's episode, in which we will be diving into the films Money Movers, The ABCs of Love and Sex Australia Style, Long Weekend, Snapshot, and The Last of the Knucklemen. So stay tuned next month for that one, and we'll see you all then. See you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
A Dingo Ate My Movie is a podcast that celebrates Australian films from the 70s, 80s and beyond. From 70s and 80s classics such as The Man from Hong Kong, Razorback and Mad Max, to the more recent fare like Body Melt, The Loved Ones and later this year Wolf Creek and Undead, there's something in there for everyone. Join us each month for a deep dive into the movies you may know well and others that might have flown under your radar. You'll find our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or your favourite podcast app, or check us out at dingomoviepod.com.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back. Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. It only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, cause you deepen the conviction.
Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in these show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark do 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 do. Surfy shark do 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 do.
And now back to the show.